Blog Talk Radio.
This is your host and friend, the Sand Tiger, DJ Southeast Vince, coming at you from a place called Durham, North Carolina. And this is Black by Color only on CNM Radio. On this show, I will discuss current events and issues that affect the black race and take on the apostles of blackness. Hopefully, you'll get something from this show. And if you have a question or a comment, make sure you season it well with respect. I'll push the kick button and you will suffer the curse of the fruit bat. So don't come here being a fruit bat, as this is a fruit bat free program. You are listening to Black by Color Only. Folks, welcome to the show. Hope today finds you doing well. If you would like to be a guest to call in to the program, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. That's 646-478-5284. And you can call in and talk about anything related to the subject matter, but I will give you a word of warning. Please be attentive to the aforementioned curse of the fruit bat. Okay, if you come onto this program and you want to indulge in excessive profanity, character assassinations, ad hominem attacks, calling in to disrupt the show, gaslighting, things of that sort, it will put you on the path to receive the curse, which means I will push the kick button and you will go bye-bye. Okay, I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me. You know, just be agreeable in your interactions on this show, and it should go all well for you. Okay, so be mindful of that. We're all adults. We carry on mature conversations, and we don't need all this wrangling and kindergarten sand slinging back and forth that a lot of people like to indulge in. Okay, so. Now, if you find that you cannot obey the rules, then don't call in, okay? But I'm not saying don't call in if you don't agree with me. I'm not saying that. But if you feel like you cannot obey the rules of yours truly here, then don't even bother calling in, because we don't need to waste our time on you, okay? So, anyway. How you guys doing? I was off last week. Excuse me. I was off last week. My wife and I, we went out of town to a town called Goldsboro, North Carolina. Hadn't been there in about, my goodness, 4 years. And the only time we go to Goldsboro is when they have an event called Wings Over Wayne. And Wings Over Wayne is the air show at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base. And we've been there the past three events that they've had at the airbase. We've been there. We went there in 2017, 2019, and then again this year. And this is the first time they've had a show since 2019. And we had a blast. I mean, we enjoyed ourselves. My wife and I, we got reservations for a special area. It was called the Beer Garden, which, you know, I don't drink beer, but it was a special place where you could have, you're right there basically by the runway, and you could see the planes as they take off and whatever and things like that. Gives you a better point of view. And it also had a sheltered area. Now, me, I was so excited. I got out there and I, you know, messed around and got sunburned, you know. When the show began, it didn't look like it was going to be much of a show because we had a lot of cloud cover. On our way to Goldsboro the previous day, we ran into some rain, and it looked like it might do a little bit of rain on Saturday as well. But the clouds cleared out, you know. The host of the program, he said he got with the chaplain and they prayed for the weather, and the weather, you know, it cleared up, you know, to the point where it was a fantastic show. It was one of the better shows. And got to see the Blue Angels. That F-22, is that thing is loud, my goodness. When they did the demonstration of the F-22, and it flew by, it was basically right in my face in a way. And it felt like a gopher was digging in my ear. And so every time it would fly past, I would put my finger in my ear to make sure that, you know, it didn't hurt my ears. And this couple, they were standing behind me. They said, "Sir, would you like some earplugs? Because we know you're putting your finger in your ear." And I was very appreciative. I was like, "Yeah, that thing is loud. I mean, it's louder than the F-15s, the F-16s. I think it was the loudest plane out there," which makes me wonder why it's a stealth jet. But hey, it is what it is. But my wife and I, we had a very good time. You know, we spent a couple of nights in Goldsboro. Goldsboro is pretty much a nondescript little town. It's not a town you'd be like, "Yeah, I want a vacation in Goldsboro." Goldsboro is one of them towns where you probably only visit in order to see family, you know, something like that. And I'm not trying to denigrate the town or anything, because I know there are a lot of great people that live in Goldsboro, and you know, but it's not one of your more spectacular type of towns, except for when Wings Over Wayne comes through. But anyway, I want to get started on today's show. I see Sarge is in the chat room. Some more people may come in as the time goes on. There was something I wanted to talk about today, and of course you all know what this show is about, and, you know, and everything. This is where I come on and, you know, I debunk a lot of the myths that are perpetrated by Black America, mainstream liberal Black America, you know, and whatever. And we had a doozy of a situation about a couple of weeks ago. And those of you all listening, whether it's live or on archives, you probably know where I'm going with this. In New York, we had a situation involving a pregnant woman. She was 6 months pregnant, and she was trying to get a bicycle. And she had to confront five Black teenagers, and the way that it was portrayed in the media, see, this is, folks, the reason why I tell you all, you don't take everything the media says at face value. You got to take it with a grain of salt, because the media is not out there to show you the truth. They're not about reporting the truth. They're about reporting news. And if they can chop up a story to where it's newsworthy, that's what they're going to do. But when we saw this clip of this lady, she was confronting these black teenagers. And now I'm going to be honest with you. Initially, it did look to me like she was, you know, help, help, you know. And I said, now it does look like she's faking, but I was like, I'm not going to make a judgment on this story because the news media does that. And then next thing you know, you have to retract yourself. And I was sitting there like, you know, it doesn't look like she's crying or whatever and everything. But I said, you know, I know how our news media is. And they even went to the point where they even doxed the lady. They found out where she lived, and they were talking to tenants of the apartment building where she lived. And you know, they were talking to this one elderly black lady, and they were telling her about this story. And the black lady was like, wait a minute, she lives in this building? You know. And they really denigrated her. I don't know if you all ever heard this jackwad named Tariq Nasheed. I didn't even think this guy was still relevant. You know, I'd heard of him in times past, and he seemed to be one of the princes of the apostles of blackness, Tariq Nasheed. I didn't even think he was still on the ground, but he had something to say about it. Of course, Rashad Ritchie, he had something about it. Of course, all of, you know, liberal mainstream black America, they had something to say about it. Said, you know, yeah, look at this Karen, you know, and they were like, now this is what gets black people killed. She put those black boys in danger because if the police had been called, they would have shot those boys as if they know what's going to happen when the police show up. And if the boys ran away, they would shoot them and everything. And see, this is the narrative that's been formed in the minds of liberal mainstream black America, that if a black person gets into a confrontation with the police, that black person's life is in danger. It's going to be in danger because it happens all the time, and it does not. It does not happen all the time. But they want you to think that. And so you can thank our news media for that. So Rashad Ritchie gets up there, and Rashad Ritchie is this token black guy on the Young Turks. Sometimes I call them the dumb jerks because they act a little jerky a lot of times. They're always angry. Every time I see, you know, a clip from the Young Turks, they always seem like they're so angry. And Rashad Ritchie is no exception. And I guess they brought Rashad Ritchie on to say, hey, we got this black dude. He's our black expert. He's going to tell us what's going on in black America. He gets up there. He starts calling her Karen and all this and everything and starts saying, you know, this is what gets black people killed. And she put those boys' lives in danger, you know, because, you know, the police will swoop in and rescue the white damsel in distress and shoot down all the black kids. Of course, I embellished it a little bit right there, but you know, you get what I'm trying to say. And within a day, I think it was within a day, this lady, she lawyered up. She lawyered up. Let me pull this up. She lawyered up and showed some evidence that what we saw was not what we thought we saw. They showed evidence that she was not trying to take a bike from these black kids. They were trying to take the bike from her. And they showed the receipts. Of course, liberal mainstream black America, they were like, oh, it's fake, it's fake, it's fake, it's fake. But it wasn't fake. And now she and her lawyer are looking to sue not the black boys that she had a conversation with, but the news media. Now, you all ever heard that term that money talks? What's up? What's up, Retta? Y'all ever heard that term money talks? Well, I don't know how much they are planning to sue the news media, the Tariq Nasheeds, the Rashad Richies, whoever, you know, got involved in this and just pounced on this story before they ever got the evidence out about what was going on. But if it were me, I would sue them for every dime they have. Because let me tell you about people like Rashad Richie and Roland Martin and all the rest of these guys. They're going to do this again. Even though Rashad Richie, you know, he put up this thing about, yeah, I was wrong and everything, but I'm not Fox News. To me, it wasn't an apology. To me, it was him trying to walk back statements so he won't be among those who get sued. He would be the first one I go after. And I'm not a person who's about money, but see, my thing would be this is a way to punish them. Because they're going to do this again. I can guarantee you these rascals are going to do it again. They can sit here and say, oh, we were wrong and we were just trying to do our best to make sure the story. No, you're going to do it again. It's going to be like, okay, well, you know, that's water under the bridge. Where's the next story about a white person assaulting a black person? In other words, I don't believe whatever apology that they can give is going to be genuine. Because they're going to do this again. They're not going to be like, okay, well, you know what? I remember this story that I put out there and I jumped to conclusions. And you know what? I need to be careful this time. They're going to do it again because that's all that they do. You know, that's the only reason why Rashad Richie is on the Young Turks, to sit there and bellyache about what white people are doing to black people in this country. That's what he's up there for. If he didn't go back to and stick to his guns, he wouldn't have a job. So he's going to go back and do it again. Now, that knucklehead, Tariq Nasheed, he's not part of any news organization. He definitely is going to go back. You know, Tariq Nasheed is just, I mean, he's just out there. I mean, really. Roland Martin, same thing. Then you got Benjamin Crump, you know, he has to poke his little slimy head out the ground. These rascals are not going to learn their lesson. Yeah, Retta, I didn't know Tariq Nasheed was still doing his mess because I hadn't heard anything about him in years. I mean, I was like, dog, is he still relevant? I guess he had to stick his head out now. And Roland Martin, that's how I remember Roland Martin. You know, he went after King Randall, who was this who's this young, enterprising black young man. A couple of years ago, he bought some property. He wanted to get kids out of the gutter. He wanted to make kids presentable so that when they became adults, they could be respectable citizens. And Roland Martin calls this boy an idiot. 21 years old, bought a school. Now, how many 21-year-olds do you know out there who are going to buy a school and say, you know what, I want to do this because I want to clean up the image of people in these black communities. I want to make them presentable. I want to teach them manners. I want to teach them etiquette. I want to teach them a trade so they can be productive when they get older. And then this guy turns around and calls him an idiot. When the idiot is the guy who is directing the word at another person. You know how they say you point your finger at somebody, you got three more pointing back at you? Roland Martin has got to be the king. The king of the apostles of blackness. I mean, he the stuff he does, I mean, the stuff he just says, I mean, the man doesn't have a thought process. And then basically what Rasheed Martin, yeah, put them together. But but what Roland Martin was saying was, oh, don't you vote, and don't you need to, you got to depend on the government for this and everything and stuff. And the boy was telling him, King Randall was telling him, said, look, we're not waiting on the government. He said, I'm not waiting on Trump. I'm not waiting on Joe Biden. We got to go out here and do for ourselves, you know. And the boy was using common sense. Man, I was feeling a little, you know, slightly ashamed myself, because I'm like, here I am, almost 55 years old. I ain't never had an enterprising mind like this boy did, and he's just barely an adult. And instead of saying, oh, man, hey, this dude wants to really do something. He really wants to get boots on the ground. He really wants to make a difference in the black communities. But once again, the crab in the bucket syndrome has to take over. And these are the same people that get up here. They start talking about, well, what can we do to improve the lives of black people? They get up, you know, every election cycle, what are you going to do for black people? And I said, now, if I was running for office and someone came up to me with a question like that, I'd be like, what are you going to do for yourselves? See, I can only do so much as an elected official, but what are you all going to do for yourselves? Because you're sitting here waiting for a handout when you can be out here actively making a difference in your communities. But you're going to depend on me to do it? No. Now, I'll be here to represent you and do, you know, what I can, follow the laws as they are outlined in the Constitution. But what are you doing for yourself? What are you doing to improve the education of the members of your communities? What are you doing to make sure that little girls don't grow up and become baby mamas? What are you doing to prevent your boys from growing up to become seed farmers, if you get my drift? What are you doing? And see, we in the black community, we have gotten so dependent on the government, and the government just loves it. And we don't even know we are being played like a 10-cent flute. We're just being used to help certain people get votes. And that's why they always throw this thing out every time we see a news story, like the city bike, the so-called city bike Karen, who was suspended from her job. She was suspended from her job because these guys were trying to take a bike from her. But of course, the interaction between a white person and a black person, oh, we already got it in our minds. That white person is already a racist. Sarah Jane Comrie. And now certain people in the news media, they're trying to walk back their statements because they know, just like, who was that kid in Washington, D.C.? Was it Suleiman? I forgot his name. The one that they accused of mocking the Native American. He sued the media. He got a nice chunk of change. But even after that, see, this is the reason why. This is the reason why these guys, I believe these guys are going to go right back to their old guns. Because even with that story up in D.C., they accused this young man of smirking at Native Americans. They didn't even see the entire, they didn't even see the entire clip. But they turned out they were wrong. Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar, they got up there and they were like, well, why do we keep falling for this? Why do we keep falling for this? And Joy Behar said, oh, it's because we don't like Trump. We hate Trump. That's why we keep falling for it. And you know what? They're still falling for it. They didn't change their rhetoric or anything. That's why I believe that Rashad Ritchie, he's going to go back to doing this because that's what pays him. Paid to be a voice for, quote unquote, victimized black people. That's what he does. Yeah, Rittenhouse, thank you. And didn't he get like a $25 million settlement? I don't know how much it was. He got a good chunk of change. But you know what? The news media, they still, to this day, here it is, several years later, they still up to their old tricks. They don't learn. They don't learn. Mr. Sandman, that's who it was, Mr. Sandman. Rittenhouse was the kid who everyone accused of being a white supremacist. He brought a gun to a riot, and he shot a couple of people, killed one, and people wanted to call him a black, a racist white man, even though the people that he shot at were white themselves. And yes, Sandman successfully sued CNN and won. And like I said, if I was this lady, Sarah Jane Comrie, I would sue them for every last thin red dime they have. Not because I'm greedy for money or anything like that, but to teach them a lesson. Because it seems like they don't get it. It seems like they don't get it. They mess up a story, and they go right back to their old tactics. You think Rashad Ritchie's going to get fired from the Young Turks? Nope. Token black guy. You think Roland Martin is going to get shut down? Nope. Token black guy. And they call me the token black guy. But they get, see, Sarah Jane, she lawyered up, and they showed the receipt, and the receipt was hers. How come those black boys didn't show their receipts? And then you get all these psychologists up here talking about, well, this and that and this. And the thing that really got me was when they said that she could have put these black boys in danger because I think the mother of one of the boys said if the police had showed up, they would have shot my son. And if he tried to run, they would have shot him. She doesn't know that. And that's another thing that bothers me, too, is these parents always taking up for their kids. That's what really bothers me. These parents always taking up for their kids. Your kid got caught up in dirt. I mean, this boy, He could have shown courtesy. This woman is 6 months pregnant, which means she's showing. And he could have been like, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. Here you go. Nah, they want to turn that into a black and white issue. See, we told you these white people, they don't respect us. I told you America is a systemically racist nation. See? And then when they're proven wrong, they just slither into their holes and go to another place and keep on what they've been doing previously. All is forgotten. Water under the bridge. So let's continue doing what, where were we at? Oh, yeah. Messing up the news. Like we always do, because it's what pays us. It's what puts money into our pockets. That's how it is. And see, this is why Black America, if they continue on this path that they're on, they will always be behind. They will always be looking for the government to get them out of whatever jam they get into. Because they have become so dependent on the government. Not only are they dependent on the government is dependent on them, because they're like, okay, since they depend on us, let's keep them dependent on us so that when the election cycle comes around, they can keep us in office. And we sit here and we talk about what white America is doing and everything, but we do not realize that we are being played. That's why I'm not a political person. I'm about the truth. That's all I'm about, is the truth. And I'm not sitting here saying don't vote and, you know, don't choose a political party or anything. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying when you put politics in the forefront, it tends to poison the culture. It poisons the culture. It gets to the point where you got to take sides. No matter if that side is right or wrong, you got to take sides. I'm not about taking sides. The only side I want to take is the side of the truth. That's it. But getting back to my point about these parents always taking up for the kids, it's always a single mom defending her son's actions. No matter how bad and unruly he is, oh, he's a good boy. That's my baby. But you don't care enough to teach him how to treat those who are older than he is. You don't care enough to teach him some etiquette so he knows how to respect those that he comes across on the street. We cry Black Lives Matter. But a lot of the Black population really doesn't believe that. It's just a cliche, a catchphrase for the rest of us. That's all it is. That's all it is. If Black lives really mattered, then Black parents need to get involved in their children's lives. I may have shared this a few weeks ago. I used to be a substitute teacher at a Christian academy here in Durham, North Carolina. And there was this little girl. She, you know, I heard her make the remark that she can't stand books because books are boring. And I said, yeah, I know where she's headed. Well, a few weeks ago, I'm just perusing around through the news and everything, and I hear about an accident on a road here in Durham, North Carolina, where someone going about 40 miles an hour above the speed limit ran a red light and struck a pedestrian and killed the pedestrian. The person in that car continued on, you know, it was a hit and run, but she came back a few hours later and, you know, and turned herself in. They had her under a $250,000 bond. Person that hit that pedestrian, killed that pedestrian, was that little girl that said, you know, books are boring. This girl is now a lesbian. And her mother, see, now this is why I don't get caught up with church folks. Because you got these church folks. These church folks are some of the worst people. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. And I say that as a Christian myself. But I have been involved with church folks. Let me tell you something. Church folks, they think, you know, they got it going on, even though they don't. They do all kinds of ugly, but they always think God is going to be on their side. So her mother gets up on Facebook talking about, oh, baby, we got this. And then starts making excuses for her daughter, saying, oh, the signal was broken. And they've had problems with that signal before. I go through that signal almost maybe every week. I've had encounters with that signal. It's a part of Durham. It's a major freeway in Durham, and it's notorious for traffic. And I'm trying to figure out how in the world this girl was going about 60, 70 miles an hour through the light, because this area is notorious for traffic. And she's up there, oh, yeah, we got this. God got our back and all that and everything. No, your daughter went over the speed limit, ran through a red light and hit a pedestrian. And then she wanted to say, oh, that pedestrian just jumped in front of her. She just jumped down in front of her out of nowhere. So, no, a hit and run doesn't make a lesbian. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the girl, she's a lesbian now. I saw her Facebook page. She flicking the middle fingers, and she got her pants hanging down and looking like a dude now. She was a cute little girl when she was a baby. She was a cute little girl. But she went to a school where they, you know, talk against lesbians and homosexuals. And, of course, in the Bible condemns homosexuality. And I'm not trying to hate on the homosexuals. You know, I'm just saying what the Bible says. Well, I wasn't like her primary teacher. Like I said, I was a substitute teacher. So I interacted with this girl very little. But when I heard her make that statement that books are boring and I don't like books, I don't like to read books and stuff like that, I said, I know where she's headed. She probably learned that from her mother. Because a lot of us in the black communities, it's like, you know, books are kryptonite. Me, I love to read. I love it. I love to read. Now, I'm not saying you got to be a bookworm or anything like that. See, no, I wasn't a mentor. No, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no. Mm-mm. But like I said, I'm not saying that people need to be a bookworm or anything like that. I'm not saying people need to be, you know, scholars and everything like that. But if you do not know how to read, you're at a disadvantage. And a lot of our reading comes through books. But of course, we got, you know, certain powers that be that are trying to hit us off at that pass because, you know, you got drag queen story hour now. We're a bunch of clownish, foolish men. Want to dress up in women's clothes in the library and read little disgusting little books to our children now. Say, yeah, okay, we'll teach them how to read, but we'll teach them, we'll give them that, we'll sprinkle it with a little perversion in there. But a lot of these kids, you can see them. You can tell when they're young. When they get older, they're going to be trouble. Now, I've seen some troublemaking kids. I've seen kids that were trouble when they were kids. When they got older, totally different. But it's just some that you know that person's going to be trouble when they get older. And sure enough, they grow up and they are trouble. And the reason why they're trouble is because their parents are not being parents. The parents aren't mature. I may have shared a story with you about my wife recently. You know, she was in she works in a daycare of the church that we used to go to. And this lady falsely accused my wife of doing some things to her daughter. I mean, just outright lied. Just falsely accused her. So they wanted to meet with the lady. The lady didn't even show up. They called the lady, texted her. She didn't even show up. So it turns out she took her kid out of the daycare and putting the kid in another daycare. Good. Later for you, good riddance. Goodbye. We don't need your kind up in here. So the other day, my wife had a meeting, and one of the state regulators came into the daycare, and they wanted to talk to my wife and said this lady had called them and told them that she was abusing her child and everything. She even went so far to say that she had a device in the child's doll baby. And she could hear everything that was going on. And I told my wife, now I know that's a lie. And my wife said, honey, the girl in question, the little girl in question, my wife said she hardly gets any trouble out of that little girl. Said a lot of times, you know how some of these kids get the separation anxiety. Their parents leave them at the daycare and they want to cry and everything. And sometimes my wife said, girl, you know, just sit down over there. Just sit down. That's it. But she said the girl's always hugging up on her and everything and stuff like that, following her around. But she said she gets no trouble out of this girl. Never really has to be firm with her or talk sternly to her and everything. But this lady said she had a device in the doll baby and she could hear everything that was going on. And I'm sitting there like, okay, if she can hear everything that's going on, that presents two situations. If she can hear this going on with her daughter, why doesn't she stop and drop whatever she's doing and come to the daycare and say, look, I heard this I got this device. And the second thing is if you have a device in there, well, let's hear it. Let's hear what you recorded on that device. And I told my wife, I said, hey, it's a lie. But she had my wife reported to the state people. And state people took down a report and everything. And I'm nervous because a lot of times you can just make a mere accusation against a daycare worker and they'll automatically believe the parents. But the other day, my wife came in and she said, honey, I'm in the clear. They're not going to do anything about it. Said, I'm good. I said, wow. So they actually took up for you. For once. And the lady's in another daycare. And they were saying she was at a previous daycare before she came to the one where my wife worked at and said The people at the daycare were always calling her from work to come and change her child's diaper. I said, now that's a lie, because daycare workers are trained to change diapers. You see what I'm talking about, these parents? Yeah. If parents know best, then why don't they teach? Yeah, exactly. You know why that's not the case? Because a lot of these parents are not fit to be parents. They're not fit to be parents. They'll sit there and a child can lie on an adult. And they say, well, my child said this about you. And they say, no, that's not what happened. Well, I'm going to believe my child. My child don't lie. Now, that's a lie right there. Can someone show me the child that has never lied? Show me one child. Even the most well-behaved children will lie on occasion. She said, my child doesn't lie. And that's what this mother was telling my wife, you know, the child. And I don't even think the child really made up the story. I think it was the mother. They said my wife locked her up in a dark room and all that stuff. And my wife's sitting there like, where in the world is this coming from? I don't even think the child made that story up. I think the mother did. Yeah, they're lazy. They're lazy. Lazy-minded parents raising lazy-minded kids. That's why our kids get in trouble so much. That's why our kids, they show no etiquette at all. Disrespect for authority, disrespect for adults. And I was watching some videos on YouTube the other day and watching these different incidents around the country about these students attacking their teachers and whatever. And I noticed it's a lot of black girls getting involved. I saw this one black girl. She and the teacher were rolling on the floor, and the teacher didn't want to hit the child. The teacher was trying to restrain the child. This child is still trying to fight her and everything, because if you hit a child, you can lose your job. Now, my thing, I'm like this, look, fire me, arrest me, prosecute me. You come up wanting to fight me, I'm putting the soup bone to your chin. Because I'm not going to sit here and let you beat up on me. Some of these kids are big. And I'm going to take you down before. Look, male, female, look, you fight like a man, you can die like one. That's just my mentality. That's my mentality. You might think I'm wrong for thinking that, for saying that, but that's just my mentality. And a lot of these teachers, they should be recommended for how they showed restraint. But they only did that because if they hit that child, they can go to jail or lose their jobs. That's stupid. Girl spraying a mace on her teacher because the teacher took the phone away from her. These kids don't care about their own well-being. They don't care about their own well-being. They just want to coast on through life. I don't want to do the tests. I don't want to be a productive citizen. And then when you get a person like King Randall who says, hey, I want to teach kids to be productive citizens when they get older. I want them to show respect to authority when they get older. We call him an idiot. And we're sitting here, oh, what are we going to do with our children? Oh, you got this guy wanting to make positive change in the young minds of our black kids in this country. And you want to call him an idiot. You know why? Because you always want to keep that victimhood going. You got to continue to perpetuate that victimhood. Because it's how we get results. Keep pushing that victimhood. Keep pushing that victimhood. Because it gets us results. And then you have our government that just plays right along. Okay, black folks, okay. We'll lower your standards so you can get into the best colleges like our other upstanding races in this country, the whites and the Asians. We'll lower your standards on the SAT so you can get a leg up. And these kids go to college and you may as well have sent them to the moon. They're like, what in the world have I got myself into? There was a school in Washington, D.C. a few years ago called Ballou, Southeast D.C., which is the most notorious part of Washington, D.C. I'm familiar with it. Grew up in that area. One year, they made an announcement that all their entire senior class, had been accepted to college, every last one of them. Already, when I heard that, I was like, wait a minute, red flag. I don't care if your school is white, Asian, black, whatever. Every single student in a graduating class is not going to end up in college. And everybody, oh yeah, these kids are going to school. They're going to a college. Oh yeah, we're so proud. Yada yada yada. Found out some of these kids, some of them been out of school for 2 months. Teachers were doctoring their grades. And some of these kids should have been set back. Some of them should have been expelled. But everybody was so proud because our little black kids are going to school. College doesn't guarantee you're going to be successful in life. I'm just going to say that. Then we hear a story from Baltimore about this kid had a 0.13 grade point average, and he was one of the top kids in his school, a 0.13 grade point average. And it was coming time. His mother thought he was graduating in a few months. They said they sent him all the way back to the ninth grade. And she's sitting there, like, oh, the school failed my boy. No, you failed your son because you didn't check in on him. You didn't get yourself involved in his academics. He probably came home, threw his jacket on the floor. You probably let him do that. And he probably went into his room and played video games. Matter of fact, she was one of these parents, once again, taking up for her kids. Oh, don't worry, baby. We're going to get through this. And he's sitting there just playing a video game. Just sitting there, just clack, 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 clack. Yeah, don't worry, baby. We're going to get through this. And she was like, I thought my baby was going to graduate. They had a surprise for you. And she said the school failed her. No, the school didn't fail your child. You failed your child because you didn't get involved in his academics. Don't they have report cards and progress reports and everything? Don't they have those? So how in the world were you unaware that your child was not going to be graduating and that his grade point average was below 1? 0.13 grade point average. I don't understand the thinking or the thought processes that goes through the heads of some of these parents. I really don't. I don't understand it to save my life. And you had these parents. They have this thing of, I don't want to teach my child. That's what the teacher is supposed to do. And because we're throwing the responsibility of teaching onto these teachers, now you got these teachers in these government schools. They're like, okay, Well, we're going to teach your child what we think they should be learning, not what they should actually be learning. But we're going to teach them what we think they should be learning. So that's where the indoctrination comes in at, because you sit there, you're not getting involved in your child's academics, and it just makes it easier for these schools to indoctrinate your child. But the white man is the reason why Black people keep falling behind in this country. It's the white man's fault. No, it's your fault. You won't get there. Let's see. Sergeant is saying here, he said, where does that lunatic New York City professor Shalene Rodriguez fit on the Karen LaQuisha bat S crazy scale? Shalene Rodriguez, that name doesn't ring a bell with me. It doesn't ring a bell with me. I don't know. Maybe I do know about that. I'm trying to figure where I've heard that name before. It doesn't ring a bell with me, but you know, I might have to look that up. I'm going to have to look that up. But anyway, we are getting to the top of the hour. I am going to do some advertisements. And when we're done, we will see you on the other side. You are listening to Black by Color only on CNM Radio.
Conservative Nation Media has a great new show that will be airing on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. The show is called Joe from Montana. Our new show's host is Joe, and he's coming to help you. Joe and his co-host, Lucid Libertarian Lori Ann, will keep you informed and ask for your input, too. This is the only talk show that's not just about talk. It's about real solutions against real corruption in fake D.C., and around this nation of ours. You've got a voice now. Just call in and offer some real solutions at 646-478-5284. God helps those who help themselves. Let's start helping ourselves and offer some real solutions. The longer we wait, the worse it's going to be, because politicians of both parties are not the answer, they're the problem. Join us for our new show and call in. Give your ideas for a solution to stop the corruption that we are seeing in our government. The show is Joe from Montana, and we have a winner here on CNM, where America always wins. A show that you are looking to get on the air on a network, CNM is looking for you. Give us a call at 505-317-8741 or email us at conservativenationmedia, all one word, 2017@gmail.com. Send us a short MP3 giving us a sample of what you would sound like, the day you want to be on, and the time you want to air your show, and we will do the rest. CNM is a talk radio network with a conservative bent, and we love America, her constitution, her laws, and we support our boys in blue and our military too. Come join us and get yourself on the air. The days we have available for new shows is Monday through Thursday, where we have no shows, and we can accommodate one show more on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Give us a call and see if we can get your show on the air on CNM. And see what happens then, where America always wins.
welcome back to the show. If you would like to be a guest to call into the program, the call-in number is 646-478-5284, 646-478-5284. And while I was doing the advertisements, Sarge let me know about this lady, the machete woman, and it just jogged my mind. Me and my wife saw this lady a few days ago. And Sarge, on the fruit bat scale, if we had a 1 to 10, this lady would be a 50. This lady, she disrupted some anti-abortion protesters, and some reporters came by her house. She opened the door and put a machete to one of the reporters' neck. Goes back into her apartment or wherever she lives, back into her den, her cave or whatever. And then they're outside. I guess they're about to get into their cars, and she comes out chasing them with a machete. And I'm sitting there like, beam me up, Scotty. Please, Scotty, please beam me up. I saw that. I said, man, that woman, I don't know if she was arrested or whatever, but she needed to be. She needed to be. I think they need to put her in a cell, and periodically someone needs to come in with some cold water and just pour it on top of her head. This woman was crazy. I mean, she had absolutely way too many fruit bats fluttering in her belfry. I mean, way too many. I mean, I saw that. I said, you got to be kidding me. This lady, yeah, she's certifiable. I mean, this lady was so certifiable, I would have put her in a padded cell, locked her up, and destroyed the key. I would have soaked that key in acid or something. Because that lady was, I said, man. And she was released without bail. Wow. Yeah, I saw that the other day. I didn't know her name, but oh my goodness. When you said the machete woman, I was, oh, that lady. I mean, she had a huge, that lady should have spent some time in jail. I would have given her at least a week. And the way she held that machete up to that reporter's neck, you could tell homegirl knew how to use that machete. And I was sitting there, I said, you have got to be kidding me. But yeah, folks, that's what we live in. We live in a land of fruit bats. Well, y'all, you all know what that means. That means I'm about to go to the phones. That's the fruit bat alert, which means if you're coming onto the phones and you want to act like a fruit bat, that means involve yourself in excessive profanity, character assassinations, ad hominem attacks, gaslighting, things of that sort. You are leading yourself down a trail where you will suffer the curse of the fruit bat, which means you will be kicked off of this show. So I don't care if you... excuse me. I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me. Just show some maturity when you interact on this show. Okay. So let me get to my first one. I think I know who this is.
Hey, hello. Vincent, welcome what's going to the on, show. Man?
What's up, dude?
Yeah, I'm in traffic, so I might have to just mute myself and you go on to the next call, but I can talk right now in part. But you know, you talk about the city bike lady. You know why come they went after her so hard? That's a question.
Oh, Oh, well, of course, they want to keep up with the narrative that, you know, black people are being oppressed by the whites and everything.
No, that's not it. The reason they went after her so hard is because she chose to have that baby.
Ah.
Yeah, she was pregnant and showing she chose to have the baby. That ain't what that crowd, that ideological crowd like. They want you to kill the baby.
Yep. You got a point there.
That's right. So that's what's going down with her. They didn't want that woman to be shown, and they didn't like the fact that she had chose to have the baby rather than abort the baby. And that's why they're going after her so hard. But I'm like, yeah. I hope she sue everyone in concern for every dime they have, and those black males that tried to steal her bike and lie on her, she needs to file civil suits on him that will stick with them until the rest of their life.
Yeah, exactly. How'd you like how they backed up their statements when they heard this lawsuit was coming out? I thought that was funny. Rashad Ritchie gets up there.
Old Pumpkinhead, they need to sue him twice.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know. Rashad Ritchie gets up there with his
don't you?
That's a Roland Martin, ain't it?
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, Trump had a large group of young black students, college students at the White House for Black History Month, and they were there in the room. He was at the podium. He was talking good things on it. But the camera did a pan, and way back in the back of the room, sitting in a chair over against the wall, guess who I seen? Pumpkinhead.
Oh, my goodness. You're kidding me.
Yeah, he was spied.
Oh, boy, I tell you.
Yeah, he was in the back of the room spying. And he had his head down so far into the collar of his shirt, I didn't think he had a neck.
Wow. Well, he don't have much of a neck anyway, but I digress.
Now, you know, you talk about Crump. Crump does do some good things now. But the thing is, he has to bait it with his victimhood stuff. And that's where it goes too far, I think. He do what he wants to.
Yeah. Yeah.
He never have, so I understand, never had a trial. He's just a plain old attorney. What he does, anybody can do, really.
Oh, yeah,
all you're doing is filing a lawsuit, filing a claim against the insurance company of the entity. You just got to show where they're wrong. You know what I mean? Like you would if you were doing an automobile accident. You was in an automobile accident, you find out who the other person is that caused it, who the insurance is, police will give you that.
Yeah.
You get the police report and you just file a claim against the insurance company. And you wouldn't have to pay 33% out to a lawyer.
Exactly. Yep.
And see, it's kind of like workers' comp. If you file a work comp claim, now I know it is in Missouri, and you have a lawyer, the most that the lawyer can collect, even if you collect $1 million, most they can collect is $6,000. That's the way the law is in Missouri.
Oh, but okay.
And, you know, you talk about the Congress and this debt ceiling. They want to raise the debt ceiling.
Oh, yeah.
But what they should be doing, what they should be doing is doing away with some of these programs, cutting the spending. Damn, raising
exactly.
the debt ceiling.
Yeah, exactly.
You're raising the debt ceiling, and it's going and what you going to what you're talking about saving, you're talking about saving, and it's going to take you 10 years. It's going to take you 10 years. You're talking about you're going to save $1 trillion. Yeah, well, that's 10 years it's going to take you. Well, in that time, in year 2, 3, 6, 7, 8, you're going to be raising the debt ceiling again.
Yep, exactly.
So don't fall for that, man. They people be lying.
Yeah.
I mean, I ain't saying they lying. I'm saying they're talking in a confusing way, which you could never understand. You follow
me? Exactly. I say let's start with the Department of Education.
Absolutely. Now, the only thing I like about the Department of Education is the grants that they give. What do they call them? The FICA?
That's about
the
it.
Now, I can deal with that. Yeah, I can deal with that. But see, here's the thing. Anytime you take a government program, a federal government program, then you got to abide by all their rules, which is totally ridiculous. Yeah. But I don't have too much to talk about today.
Okay.
Oh, I'll tell you something else. I heard some people talking about, they like to go back in history, and they can start with 2003 with Harry Belafonte dying, and next thing you know, they're all the way back in the ancient Egypt, then they come back and stop off in the 1700s and 1800s.
Yeah.
But I heard some people talking today made mention of Richard Allen. You know who he was, don't you?
Richard Allen. Name. I got so many names going through my head.
The AME Church.
Okay, yeah.
African Methodist Episcopal. You remember he started that because at the time they wouldn't give any charters out to the blacks. All right. And he thought they were closed. So keep talking.
But yeah,
what happened, and I'm getting ready to go into this, but what happened with Richard Allen was a mulatto.
Sure.
And
enough.
I've been by his church, their church that's in Philadelphia. It's called Little Bethel. Pictures on the wall of the congregation. So what they done is that they segregated people according to skin color. You can see it in the picture. All the white, light-skinned blacks sat in the front, and all the dark-skinned was upstairs in the bathroom. So he was a mulatto. His father was white. He was Dutch. And they show pictures of his father. His father was Dutch. They got sloping shoulders. He's got sloping shoulders, okay? And supposedly, he married a woman, and she was a slave.
Oh.
But when you look at pictures of the woman, guess what? She was a white slave.
Wow. Wait a minute now. Wait. Back up. So he marries this woman who was a slave, and she turns out to be a white slave.
And he bought her freedom. And her kids, because in colonial times, in colonial times, the children take on the status of the mother.
Yeah.
If the mother is a slave, the children are slaves. Same thing in Africa. Probably where it came from. But his name at first was Negro Allen. And he changed it to Richard Allen.
Yeah.
And their family goes back to the Penns, P-N-N. And the Penns have a long history in Philadelphia. William Penn, and so on,
yeah.
So on, so on. You've heard of that before, haven't you? Pennsylvania, hell.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's how Pennsylvania got his name.
So it's funny how these names keep running into each other as you go exploring through history.
I mean, for real, I tell you, my mind is just blown about the white slave concept. He marries her and buys her freedom. Oh, my goodness.
Well, see, he was a mulatto. He wasn't going to marry no darkie.
No.
They don't do that.
Certainly wasn't. Yeah.
They have nothing in common with them.
Yep.
That's the same thing down in Louisiana, where you had all those black slaveholders. Well, they really wasn't black. It was mulatto. Now, you might have some darkies, but they were mulatto. And the story there is that 28% of the blacks there were slaveholders, and 80% of them were women, females. Why is that?
Female slave owners.
Because when the master
female
died, he gave... Yeah, when the master died, he's usually white, he left the inheritance to his wife.
Wow.
So these people that are telling these histories, they only tell one side of it. It sounds good. And it sells books,
yeah.
Sam, which is one-sided.
Yeah, that's all it does.
And it pays for your admittance to come in and listen to the lectures, which is usually $20.
Wow. It seems like I get a little bit more of a history lesson every time I do this show. And you guys get up on here. I never would have known that. I never would have known that. But I knew about the one third of free blacks in Louisiana. They were actually slaveholders, and yeah, they were mulattoes. You know, of course, they say you get that one drop in you that automatically makes you black. I don't know who came up with that rule, but
well, look, let me
is,
tell you
but,
something. This past Monday, I was at Louisiana Cap, working on talking to a senator. A black senator,
okay.
So me and this person that was with me, we were sitting over in the corner of the room where they allow four chairs for advocacy for the teachers union. So just one very light bright, damn near white male, we got into a conversation. Ended up being in an argument. Because he's representing the teachers union, and I will tell them how horrible they are when it comes down to topics like school choice. And that how they buy out politicians. Oh, hell no, what are you talking about? And he went on, how old are you? I said, what do they got? So I gave him my references, and he didn't want to believe it.
Yeah,
and it got to
that's
a point
how they do.
Where he turned around and wouldn't talk to them. Now, this guy is real light skinned. Okay. Now, later on, a few minutes later, another guy came in, a white guy came in, and he was talking. I guess he was part of the teachers union advocacy. And they were talking about the shootings that were going on in Louisiana, especially down in New Orleans. So you know what this guy, Milo, said? He said, let them kill each other. Let them kill each other.
Wow.
I kid you not, this is what he said. Let them kill each other so there won't be nobody left to shoot.
Wow, but I thought Black Lives Matter.
That sentiment still exists today. But look, I'm going to let you get to the next caller because I can talk on, on my experiences. It ain't necessary stuff not reading the book because the stuff you read in the book, there's so much science that's coming out proving that to be wrong. But it really, you can't blame the people that wrote it because that's all they knew at the time.
What
I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all they knew at the time. And I keep sending you this information about joining COS, man, signing that petition.
I got it pulled up on my browser as we speak. And I said, when the when this show is over, I'm gonna check that out. I'm gonna throw my support behind it.
Yeah, throw your support behind it. Check out the email and text blast. And what they do, they'll let you know when bills are coming up in the General Assembly. Like here, they had a bill that gives parents fundamental rights over their children. Another bill that constitutional carry throughout the state. Another bill where a child under 18 can't undergo any sex changes or receive any gender where it changes their hormones and stuff like that.
Gender assignment surgery.
Hey, they got another bill where they put in Bible studies classes back into school, and also in God We Trust on the building. Now, who would be against something like that? You wouldn't believe that anybody would, but they are.
And I'm glad you said. I'm glad you mentioned that, because when we were at the air show last week, they started off with a prayer, which the prayer was awesome, and then they sang the national anthem, and of course I got my hat down and had my hand over my heart, and I was just kind of looking around to see if anybody was kneeling, you know, but nobody was kneeling. Nobody was kneeling. Everybody, you know, they showed respect and everything. And, you know, I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, nobody was kneeling. Everybody, you know, they stood for the flag. They put their hands over their heart. You know, those who didn't who had hats on, they took their hats off. I was like, okay, this is cool. I was like, now, you know, ain't nobody supposed to be kneeling at no Air Force base when you're singing the national anthem, you know. So
you're absolutely right.
All right,
I'm gonna let you go ahead to the next caller. I continue to listen.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Pianchi. All righty, we got another caller on here. Get this caller up on here. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Man, Vince, you know, every time that doggone Pianchi come on, man, I got 2 pages of notes now I got to do some research into. That guy keeps me busy. But
I mean,
anyway,
really.
Yeah, he does, man. He just like, now I got to go look this up. I was going to look up other things, but now Pianchi got me looking into this. Man, see that? Almost every time he does that. But anyway. You got to come up with a new category, man, of fruit baptism. Now, we know what a standard bat is and what the standard level of fruit bat crazy is. Now, you got to come up with a new designation for somebody like Shalane Rodriguez. You got to come up with something like fruit bat S-H-N-I-T crazy. You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
so you could distinguish between the various categories of fruit batism.
I mean,
so
she's an atomic level.
I think you need categories. You need rankings so we can discern the intensity of the fruit baptism one from the other, because her level of fruit baptism was off the charts. I mean, it's like seismic.
Atomic,
it's like this moon is seismic 2 on the Richter scale and seismic 8.5 or 9.
I mean, she is atomic. I mean, I'll say even close to supernova. I said, you got to be kidding me. And we let people like this, you know. Does she have any kids or anything like that?
I don't believe so. I don't know for sure. I haven't seen any information to that effect. But she's a Marxist, and that's the most important thing you need to know about. And this is the way Marxists behave. Notice this. All of the left today have almost completely forsworn attempting to persuade you by reason and debate, because they know their ideas cannot stand up to scrutiny. They know this. That's why they're so eager to censor and cancel. So they resorted instead to, first of all, Their primary weapon is censoring, canceling, silencing, ignoring, and the like. Their secondary weapon in their quiver is extortion, threats, intimidation, and if all that fails, physical violence and threats. It's their pattern. It is clear as a bell. There is nothing comparable from the right. Nothing. I don't care what they say about threats of white supremacy or whatever that they claim to be conservative. There is nothing comparable on the right. I mean nothing like what they do. I mean, like that Nebraska state senator. I mean, you heard that crazy woman, didn't you? Or whatever it was. I don't know if it was a man or woman or transgender. Just ranting and ranting and ranting 3 minutes. We love transgenders. Transgenders belong here. You know, it's the same thing over and over. Three solid minutes. In becoming increasingly hysterical the more she chanted. She's a state senator. This was on the floor of the state senate. When she had her time to speak, she spent 3 minutes ranting the same phrases over and over again for almost 3 minutes. And then at the end of it, she sort of calmed down and said in a hushed voice, with the glittering eyes of a complete fanatic, "We love transgenders. Transgenders belong here. We love them. I will never stop fighting for transgenders." And then she walked up. It was... If you haven't seen it, I'll put a link to it in the chat room. You've got to see it. It's beyond belief. But like I said, this is what we've got to deal with. And as a corollary to what I just got through talking about, when you talk about the Citibank Karen, and I guess that's what her title is now, the Citibank Karen, I guess they're pulling back on that one now that we're finding out the truth about it. Now, based upon what I've been able to research and looking into this, I believe that these kids had a type of bike they wanted to ride. And they were in the habit, probably, or at least looks like with this woman, it would appear that they wanted that she would pay for it, and they would hastily take it away from her after she paid for it. And she prevented them from doing it. And that's how the whole thing got started. You know? And what gets me is how utterly contemptuous and derisive and dismissive they were of this woman's complaint. Now, we got to remember, she's... Pregnant women are often prone to hysteria, even when they're not under stress. This is a common trait with pregnant women. Everybody's noted it. Everybody responds to it. So here's a woman who not only is not just in an advanced stage of pregnancy, and she's under a great deal of stress no matter what you think the situation is. She's clearly under a great deal of stress. A response of many pregnant women in a situation like that is to break out in tears. And then they looked at it, the fake tears from the fake Karen, you know, oppressing these innocent young black men, exercising her white privilege and her tears of a white woman that have led to lynchings of black men in the past, like Emmett Till and the Scottsboro Boys almost, and all the rest. See, they always got to go back 100-something years in history to pull out their little jive. 80, 100 years in history. You know, and they try to bring it to a contemporary situation where it has no analog whatsoever. But this is what they do. They are the most dishonest, demagogic people to ever exist. They are Bolsheviks. They are Marxists. We got to keep remembering. That's the way they roll. That is their tactic.
Yeah. But did you hear mother of one of the boys said? Did you hear what the mother of one of the boys said? If the police had been called, they would have shot my son. Or if he tried to run off, they would have shot him.
It's like I said, man. The one thing we can always count on about leftists is... The fact, I put this in the chat room, I said leftists in the racial industrial complex are pearl-clutching hysterics. They almost completely ignore the avalanche of murders of black men by other black men all throughout blue inner cities and blue and or occasionally red states in favor of an unwarranted emphasis on the relative paltry number of black men shot by the police, and even then... Most of those shootings of black men are in legally justified circumstances.
Yep.
But they were elevated to a level of genocide. I mean, and they'll completely ignore almost, you know, only give lip service, brief lip service, to the thousands of black men murdered by other black men every year. It is the most astonishing thing, and they keep getting away with it because they're members of the racial industrial complex, and they hold extortive hostage over much of the media.
Yeah.
And like I said, we can
never...
Yeah, go ahead, Vince.
Can you answer me this, though? And, you know, you're a smart man and whatever. I'm going to ask you a question. How many triple-digit homicides have occurred between the police and unarmed black men every year?
To my mind, zero. I don't think this ever happened in the history of the United States. Not triple digits.
My point exactly. So for them
not
to raise this to the
history,
level
I mean,
of
if
genocide,
it has happened, it wasn't. Were there any records to corroborate such a thing? But of course, that won't ever stop the left. They'll say, well, they just didn't record them. See, they always got an answer for everything that didn't fit their narratives. But no,
yeah,
I don't
exactly.
know of any. I don't know of any such records that would exist anywhere. Double digits, maybe. But yes, double digits on many occasions, but never even triple digits. No.
Yeah. So how they raise this to the level of genocide, it boggles the mind.
Speaking of shooting, by the way, when it came to Shalane Rodriguez, do you realize that if either of those men had been strapped or if a bystander had been strapped, they would be completely justified in shooting that woman dead right then, right there?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That would have been a completely justified situation involving the use of deadly force against someone presenting an imminent threat of life, of death, or serious bodily harm to someone. And you would have seen those Bolsheviks in New York City rioting over it. Talk about, they didn't have the shooter. And she put a knife to someone's throat.
Yeah, I mean, I thought she was going to lop his head off. I mean, and this woman is a...
She chased them outside after they were leaving.
Yeah, I saw that. I said, oh, this woman is crazy.
It's not
and
just that, okay, okay. It's like we were talking about this, and Pionki was on a show with me, and we were talking about this the other day. And like Pionki quite aptly said that if she didn't want to be bothered, she could have had a sign on her door saying no solicitation. All right?
Yeah.
But even
if she
had someone knocking on the door, it is not a warranted response to threaten them with deadly force for ignoring your sign of no solicitations, even then.
That's right.
And
this
is
from what I know about this lady,
because all kind of people are defending this crazy woman.
Yeah. And from what I know about this lady, she was a teacher at a university.
Hunter College in the city of New York.
She got fired, but look what it took
to get her fired, man. I mean, you know, if she'd have just stopped when she wrecked those people's abortion display, she might not have gotten fired, I bet. You know, I mean, but I guess they said, okay, you know, wrecking someone who's peacefully, not even protesting, really, just providing information on the gestation process and what a fetus is undergoing as it's growing in the womb. It's information.
That's all they were doing.
You know, free speech, amendment, letting them know. This woman comes along and says it's violence. She used that word. It's violence to my students. She is going to be a one-person censorship board. Like all these arrogant Marxists. They take it upon themselves to decide what you're supposed to be allowed to say and what your speech should be to others. I cannot overemphasize this. They are Marxist/fascist. And we better start looking them that way, because these people are as dangerous as anything that the United States has ever been confronted with regard to our liberties.
Oh, yes. Now,
one of the worst public manifestations of it. Now, there are people out there that are a lot more sophisticated, a lot more subtle, who want to do exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Yep. And she could probably start a trend by what she did. I mean, when she came out with that knife, I mean, she was like a martial artist. I saw that. I said, this woman, My wife and I were looking at that. I said, this woman is crazy.
Wait a minute, Vince. She ain't starting no trend. Trend's long been out of the gate. Our college campuses are nothing more than ivy-covered North Koreas. And increasingly, much more and more of the society every day is becoming ever worse. So the trend is long underway. And it's only only gathering steam. These people now feel entitled to curtail your speech.
True that. And did you hear about the good news this week, though?
What that?
It's a certain organization's going bankrupt this week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, burn, loot, and murder.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I heard about it. Yeah.
I heard that.
Always surprised, given their spendthrift nature of all the largesse that was bestowed upon them. What do? They handed it out to their cronies like the corrupt little wenches that they are.
Yep. And they was, I think Patrice Cullors was still able to pay a family member like $1.6 million.
Yeah, for security.
And I'm sitting there like, yeah. I said, you got to be kidding me.
Man, they
and
had
see,
a great grift on. All they had to do was just make sure that they divvied out a little bit of the people they were purporting to be serving and make sure the grants were made publicly so everyone know, well, we get a little taste, kicking a little taste back to the stooges out there and the little useful idiots that are supporting our movement. And the money would have kept coming in from all the foundations and the corporations and everybody else who wanted to keep the racial gray ladies off their neck and not be subject to the extortive demands of these Bolsheviks. But no, they couldn't do that. No, they couldn't do that. What they had to do was just take the whole thing. They didn't have enough sense. They didn't have enough sense to know you got to keep up public appearances.
That's right. And, you know, they didn't even invest it into, you know, the communities that they said they cared for. And not only that, when they did get properties and whatever, you know, they talk about how black people are in danger, you know, because white people are looking to finish them off and everything and stuff like that. And here they are buying properties in white neighborhoods. Topanga Canyon. Is about as white as this sheet of paper I'm looking at.
Well, whenever you hear anyone claim and proudly proclaim that they are trained Marxists, you'd better hang on to your wallet and look out for your freedoms because they're coming after both. The minute they start bragging about being trained Marxists, you know what time it is. You better reach for your whatever. I'm not going to say it. You just be careful because you know what they're after.
Oh, yeah. That's whenever you hear Marxists, you know it's gonna cost the people around them their hard-earned dollars, you know. And but it amazed me that she got up there and actually kind of bragged about being a, you know, trained Marxist. Like, she just said it like, we're trained
and
Marxists.
And bragged about it. No, she didn't just admit to, well, yes, in my youth I was enamored of Marxism and all that. And you understand how it is when you're young, you have a lot of passion. No, she bragged about it. She was happy to extol her Marxist background. I guess she thought this gave her legitimacy with the people she was seeking to extort.
Yeah, so...
But by the way, I would like to ask a little bit of your indulgence there, Vince, if you'll allow me.
Okay.
This is Memorial Day, and I'd like to give a shout out to my fallen brothers, who I think about almost every day, if not every day, and I really regret their passing. I mean, my brothers were just the best I ever know. If I could, I'd like to read their names.
Okay, go right ahead.
Died while I was with them. Is that okay?
Yeah, that go right ahead.
Yeah, well, thank you, Vince. Now, I got called up for three wars. I got called up while I was in Vietnam. I volunteered for that. And my National Guard unit got called up for the Gulf War. We staged the Germany in preparation to be deployed to Iraq. But the 100-hour war was over so quickly, they didn't need us to be there. So we just stayed there for about 6 or 7 months, and we came back to stateside. Nobody got killed there. Operation Iraqi Freedom, one man from my unit was killed. But the outfit I was in Vietnam was the 1st Brigade of the 5th Mechanized Infantry Division. It was deployed in March of 1968 to Quang Tri Province on the Demilitarized Zone in Vietnam. And it was there from 11th April 68 to June of 1971. During that time period, it sustained about 528 men killed in action and about 2,300 wounded in action. And I believe four were missing. Four men were missing in action there. Of course, they're considered dead after all this time. But these are the men that are names on that wall, most of them around panel 10W and 11W, because that's the time frame in which they died, the time frame that I served with them. And here they are, because I think we should at least know these men existed. They were every single one of them, even the ones I didn't like, I knew I could count on when the chips were down. The ones I like were like my brothers, and every day I think about them. And a couple of them, I would not be here alive talking to you today if it wasn't for them. And the one I'd like to start off with is First Lieutenant Bruce W. Heskett, who was an artillery forward observer, who literally gave his life to keep the steel on the target when we were about to be overrun one night by a reinforced North Vietnamese battalion. Thanks to him, we made it through, and he was wounded, and he refused to be evacuated or treated while he continued to adjust the close support from the air strikes and from the artillery. So I'd like to say it about First Lieutenant Bruce Heskett, then Private First Class Bernard Herman Bax, Special Force Samuel Alonzo Bissent, Sergeant First Class Lester Earl Bunner, Special Force Chris B. Cordova, Private First Class Carl Dean Dixon, Special Force Thomas Hoyt Farmer, First Lieutenant James Kenneth Flannery, Special Force Eugene Marshall Frick, Sergeant Dwight Gordon Gardner, Corporal Terry Lee Gilpin, Sergeant First Class John Alton Herbert, Staff Sergeant Michael Leonard Hodge, Staff Sergeant Eugene Huggins, Private First Class Francis Joseph Keller, Corporal Glenn Errol Kelly, First Lieutenant Robert Burton Lacantis, Special Force John Eugene Lays, Sergeant First Class Albert McCantle, Special Force William Joseph Martinez, Staff Sergeant Raymond Allen May, First Lieutenant Ted Owen McCandless, Corporal Gary McCullough, Staff Sergeant Jerry Lewis Ogren, Special Force Grover Cecil Pearson, Staff Sergeant Arthur Houston Price, Staff Sergeant Joseph Thomas Robertson, Sergeant William Howard Schaller, Sergeant First Class Roscoe Sabert, Corporal Eugene Ray Tanner, Sergeant David Thornton Taylor, Corporal Gene Billy Wade, and Private First Class Charles Winston Walker. And another thing, too, you know, we commemorate these men's deaths, as we should, and you know, remember that what they gave up. They gave up all of their tomorrows for our todays, and that's about the kind of thing I could think of to say about them. But I just wanted to mention, it wasn't just their deaths alone that was so sad and gruesome. It was the suffering many of them endured before they were killed. I'm talking about days and days of utterly horrific climactic conditions. Heat like you wouldn't believe, humidity like you wouldn't believe, diseases, malaria, dengue fever, typhus, scrub fever, scabies and lice, and not lice, but scrub typhus and stuff like that. And the day after the day, misery of humping. Guys who were like fought in Korea, they had to endure hypothermia and frostbite along with everything else. The men in the unheated, unpressurized, heavy bombers of World War II at 30,000 feet, 60 degrees below zero outside ambient temperature, with the wind coming through the openings in those aircraft at like 180, 200 miles an hour slipstream. And, you know, the sailors on the storm-tossed seas and the ships, you know, getting seasick. Running the Arctic convoys with the cold and the water and everything else. That kind of thing a lot of people don't really appreciate. as they look quite appropriately at the fact that they died. But in the process of dying, the weeks and months of what you have to endure, the suffering you undergo, is like what most people cannot ever understand. And you have to do your duty despite the fact that you're sick. And you're sick with diseases that would cause you to call off work and stay in bed for a week or two. And it was routine for you to have to keep going despite this. And I think that's another thing we should commemorate as we think of these people who died and are buried, and they're our loved ones and our friends and people we admire and people we will never know who gave their lives heroically before we were born, dating back to 1775. I think we need to acknowledge that part of their sacrifice too. And I salute my brothers. I think about you every day. I love you. And everyone else who has a loved one or a comrade who fell in battle or just in the service of the country, a training accident, because that's part of preparing for battle. I mean, one of the most dangerous jobs in the world is flying a high-performance fighter aircraft, and so many people die in training for that job. That's part of it, too. That's part of people who are memorial. The guys are dying hard training, rappelling, learning how to rappel down cliffs and climb mountains, and they die training. That's part of it, too. They died in the line of duty. Everyone who did, that Memorial Day is for every single one of them, and I hope everyone gives a moment to think about it and exchange their thoughts with other people, because unfortunately, there may be more to come.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that, Sarge. Because I wanted to start the show off, you know, remembering those, because I'm aware that Memorial Day is Monday, and I don't know why it slipped my mind, but I'm glad you came on and brought it back to that. You know, I'd like to remember somebody too that I learned a few years ago that I was a relative of in the Korean War, a man named Cornelius Charlton. He was awarded the Medal of Honor.
That's the same guy.
Yeah, and he was one of two black men to receive the Medal of Honor.
He was in the 24th Infantry Regiment assigned. I believe they were assigned to the it was the last segregated black unit still in service in the United States Army. And he was assigned, I believe, to the 24th Infantry Division. And it was in the first 1950 was when he did the deeds that got him the award of the Medal of Honor.
Yeah, I think
he was a machine gunner.
Yeah, yeah. And right. He saved five of his buddies. I discovered a few years ago that this guy was a distant relative of mine. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? And they said he even has a boat named after him in California.
Right.
And I was like, wow, I did not know, you know, and I was like, you know, when we do black history, we're always doing the usual names and everything. But here I am. I got somebody, you know, pretty much in my family, you know, they finally buried him in Arlington National Cemetery. They had a to-do about that. And they finally got him buried in Arlington National Cemetery. And I just wanted to remember him as well. You know, even though I might not know him or his closest family and everything, but it, you know, I was told by a family member of mine that he's a relative. He was a cousin of my aunts and uncles. So I just wanted to remember him as well. You know, so
yeah,
I'm glad you brought up
that. I am
very
familiar with this story, and that's a great thing, man. To have someone like that in your family. He was a true soldier and hero, and what he did was, excuse me, as they describe it, far above and beyond the call of duty. And that's the only thing you stop to think how few men have been awarded the Medal of Honor, considering how many people served. Like in World War II, about 11 to 12 million people served in the United States Armed Forces. They only saw fit to award the Medal of Honor to 445 of them in World War II. And in Korea, it was something like, I think, 170 or 200. Your cousin is in esteemed territory. He's one of a paltry percentage of Americans who have accomplished deeds that are considered worthy of the Medal of Honor. And he did earn it.
Yeah.
He earned the medal that day.
Yeah, he was wounded, and, you know, they said he, I forget, he sat on a grenade or something. I got to look it up again, but he actually saved five.
He was repeatedly wounded while attacking a Chinese bunker when during the 8th Army counteroffensive to push the Chinese and North Korean troops further north out of South Korea. And
exactly.
They were attacked. They were trying to capture the company he was in was trying to take a hill. And there were Chinese that were heavily entrenched on the hill. They had mortars at the top of the hill, and the platoon leader was fatally wounded, and called into command of the platoon and organized it for an attack. And he led the platoon up that hill three times in the face of intense mortar, artillery, and machine gun fire, and he single-handedly knocked out a couple of Chinese positions. He killed about six or seven Chinese soldiers with rifle fire and hand grenades. He got shot in the chest. He refused to be medically evacuated, and he kept pushing his platoon, and as a result, the company forward, and he led from the front despite being severely wounded, and he was holding his hand over his chest to try to staunch the bleeding and firing his M1 carbine with the other hand, and they managed to get past the Chinese positions, and then when they saw a bunker that the mortars were firing from, Carlton decided, he said he's going to destroy this bunker. And he said, he's already wounded, maybe even dying from the wound, who knows. His last words were, "Let's go," and he urged the platoon forward. He was at the front of the platoon with the rest of his men. He went to the top of the hill by himself and where the Chinese mortars were located, and he fired complete over and over again on the emplacement there, and they wounded him when they threw a grenade at him. He took more shrapnel wounds from the hand grenade Chinese tossed at him, but he kept shooting until it destroyed the position, and then he died later from the subsequent wounds and probably the wound to his chest. And they said he saved most of his platoon. A true American hero. I swear to God. I mean, that's you don't get much better than that.
Yeah.
I think his nickname was Connie or something like that.
Yeah, it was Connie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
great man, great soldier. He deserves to be remembered on this Memorial Day. One of hundreds of thousands that we need to remember on this day.
Yeah. I consider it an honor to have been to be somewhat related to someone with that type of bravery and everything. And Sarge, I really appreciate this. I appreciate you bringing the show back to this moment where we remember these people that made the ultimate sacrifice, you know, because a lot of times we'll go out, you know, Monday is like barbecue and, you know, on the grill, let's go swimming at the lake, and all that's good. That's good. It's fine. But, you know, we really got to remember what this day has been set aside for, you know.
And
so,
remember, when he was in the Army, now, he really had a gripe against the United States being in he was in the last all-black unit of the United States Army. It was segregated. We know about Jim Crow during that time period. We know about what was going on with black people. But this man said, "Hell, I'm a soldier. I'm serving my country."
That's right.
You know,
That's right.
I'm serving my country despite that, because it's my country and my country's in a fight, and I'm going to be in there with it, with my country.
Exactly.
You know? And, I'm glad they put him in Arlington, because that's where he belongs, for sure.
That's where he belongs. Yep. And when we were at the air show.
And he enlisted in the United States Army.
Yeah.
You know,
when we were at the air show last week, we got to see a P-51 flying. And every time I see a P-51, I always think about the Red Tails in World War II, the Tuskegee Airmen, the discrimination they went through. You know, having to rise through those ranks and becoming as honored as they were. You know, I think a couple of them became aces, if I'm correct. I think two of them were World War II aces. And I, you know, I always think about them too, you know, because of the time period that they were living in, and they had to prove themselves, and they proved themselves with honor, you know. So,
yeah,
and, you know,
no,
so
I think there was a recommendation for Connie to be awarded a battlefield commission as an officer because he shows such outstanding leadership ability. And I think the records, they ought to posthumously give him a commission even today, even though he's got the Medal of Honor. I mean, you can't get a higher decoration than that. It's not possible. But I think it would be appropriate to award him a battlefield commission as well because he clearly earned that too.
Yeah.
He just never even lived long enough to have it given.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, yeah, and folks, you know, if you know of anybody, you know, that made the ultimate sacrifice, take this time to remember those that have gone ahead of us to fight for the freedoms that we enjoy today, you know. And this is one of the reasons why I'm so passionate on this show, you know, because we are living in the best country in the world, and we enjoying freedoms like no one else. And we have people trying to erode these freedoms, but And we just don't want these soldiers' ultimate sacrifices to be in vain, you know, when we try to erode these freedoms that we enjoy today, you know. And let's try to, you know, commemorate them, remember them, whatever, you know. If you know of a loved one that made the ultimate sacrifice, you know, do your due diligence. I guess I can say that. Do your due diligence to remember them and the ultimate sacrifices that they made. So,
and you know what, too? Vince, your cousin's sacrifice was not at all in vain because, you know what? What he did helped to create and preserve and enable the country of South Korea to exist, which stands as a stark contrast to North Korea. Think of all the millions of people in South Korea who live in prosperity, liberty, and freedom when you compare them to their brothers across the DMZ. It stands in stark contrast. Its sacrifice enabled all of those people to have happy lives and to become a reliable trading partner with the United States and the rest of the world, to come up with innovative products that all of us buy now, like Kias and Hyundai's, Samsung TVs. And then you compare that with North Korea, where people live in abject misery. Genetically, they're the same people. They speak the same language, the same thing.
Yep.
And the difference is so stark as to say, if anything were to justify his sacrifice and the sacrifice of the 38,000 other Americans who were killed in action in Korea, that would be it. If anything could. I'm not sure it actually does, but let's say that it does. If anything does, the very existence of the nation of South Korea contrasted with the nation of North Korea is a testimony to it.
Okay.
So he didn't die in vain. I don't think he died in vain.
Yes, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And, well, you all, we come to the end of the program. And thank you, Sarge. Thank you, Pianki. Bring it, Boye. I think that's Suzette. And, of course, my sister up in New York, Retta, really appreciate you guys coming to the show today. And once again, like I said, you know, hey, take that time to remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice to help perpetuate the freedoms that we enjoy today. Next week, I will not be having a show. It'll be the first of the month. So next week, I won't have a show, but on in 2 weeks, I should be, God willing, I will get this show fired up again. And you all, you know, enjoy your holiday. Enjoy your holiday, but remember what this holiday is about. But anyway, this is Vincent E. Brown. I am signing off. And until the next time, I'll see you on the rebound. You all have a great holiday.